Hello, friends. Welcome once again to the Perfect Bound Podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comic books and comics related, brought to you by the Panel Jumper and Comic Central. My name is Ben. With me, as always, is Nicole Lam.
Hello.
Hello, Cole Hornaday.
What?
Hi. And, of course, Mr. Chris Caso.
Hello.
How is everybody this fine, warm Northwest evening?
Some of us are cranky.
Yeah.
I like the wahey turned into wahat. It's good.
I don't do that. It's just, well, it's this, you know, evolution, this progression of nastiness that's just
you are one of us.
I like evolution of nastiness. Yeah.
Plus I don't have Patrick Bromling to egg me on anymore. I mean, I know he still listens.
Does he not do it online?
No, he doesn't.
Oh.
You know, I think he's been out there in Washington.
Do we need to check up on him?
No, I mean, I hear from him every day.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's just that we just don't have that connective tissue that we once
had.
He's still there. He still supports me. He still says lovely things. We still do a little bit of, you know, good-natured boyish ribbing over the internet. It's really fun.
I was in a play with his lovely wife about almost, oh my gosh, 18 years ago.
That's a long time ago.
That's a long time ago. Anyway, moving on.
Mysterious human.
Of the old world Seattle theater.
Yeah. Back in the little theater when Northwest Film Forum still had Wiggly World. Anyway, friends, let's talk about comic books. Let's talk about Comics Dungeon. What's coming up here, friends?
Well, we don't have too many particular events, but if you've been paying attention, there is a new Comic-Con popping up over here. It's the Ace Comic-Con, and it's going to be at the WAMU Theater in CenturyLink Field on June 22nd through 24th, and we will have a couple tables there.
Cool.
So the Dungeon and C4C3 will be representing. And
this convention totally caught me unawares. Is this Ace? Is it in competition with Reed Pop, or who are these folks?
So
we got some big name celebrities showing up.
Yeah, so a couple of the guys that did Wizard World cons are behind it. So it's like the Seamus brothers, Garib and the other one. And so I think this one travels around a little bit. It's not specifically Seattle.
Gotcha.
So I don't think it's like really competition. It's a bit different too. It's more celebrity based.
Mm-hmm.
It's got Chris Hemsworth, Chris Evans, and Tom Hiddleston.
Ooh.
And the other Tom, who's Spider-Man, and
Holland.
Thank you.
Although two out of three Chris's can't be wrong. I mean,
yeah.
Look at those.
It looks like a
Chris and not Chris.
Or Teen Beat or something.
It's a really dreamy flyer we have.
Yeah,
here.
The boys are extra dreamy in the photos.
Do the Chris's and not Chris travel around with Ace Comic Con to the different cities that they visit?
I'm not entirely sure how that. I think Chris Evans has done Ace Comic Con before. I don't know if the others have.
Mm-hmm.
They also have Paul Bettany, who's the Vision.
Right.
And they've got the Scarlet Witch, and they got Shinsuke Nakamura, the wrestler.
Which is the thing we light up the most about.
Yeah. He's the least expensive. I think it's only $50 to get like an autograph and a picture from him.
Ooh, that's still pricey.
I think it's like $600 to get it with these three guys.
Holy crap.
Oh,
yeah.
No.
Six? Like all at once?
There's like a VIP package where it's like $1,400 or $1,500.
Yeah.
So you get to hang out with them too?
Probably not.
You got that kind of money to burn.
Yeah.
This is Seattle. There's tons of money to burn here.
So it's a little bit of a different
focus.
Burn it
at Comics Dungeon at 319 Northeast 45th Street.
Beautiful downtown Wallingford. All right, so you guys are going to be representing at Ace Comic Con.
Yes, yes.
Great.
So that's kind of the next big thing we've got. We will be at Lilac City Comic Con, and we're working on a few other things as well.
Yep.
Cool.
And as usual, we have our book clubs every third Friday. Our next one will be June 15th, where we will be discussing Battle Angel Alita Volume 1.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. That's Alita. Friday, 7 p.m. 7 p.m. to 8 p.m.
All right.
Yep.
Cool. Great. Thank you, friends. Moving on. It's a lot of multimedia news this week. We're going to start off with Infinity War. It's raking it in. I only bring it up because I haven't seen it yet, and it is hard looking for comic book news without running across Infinity War spoilers.
Yeah.
Have any of us seen it besides not me?
Yes.
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 You guys
twice.
We've seen it.
Twice?
I've seen it once. Cole?
No. I've been busy doing theater stuff and panel jumper stuff. So.
Yeah.
And every night I think I should really get out and see it. I'm like, it's really comfy right here in the cat.
Yeah, don't blame you.
Watching
yeah.
the return of Mystery Science Theater with the cat. I'm happy.
Yeah, I'm making my way through the MCU, and I'm on Thor Ragnarok.
Or Dark World or Ragnarok?
Oh, I'm sorry. The Dark World. I've seen Thor Ragnarok. Yeah. But I even movies I have seen, I'm watching again.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Good on you.
Because I have a terrible memory for things that I read and watch.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so watching the first Iron Man again, or watching Avengers, the Avengers again, was a big eye opening because I that's right, that happened.
Right, right. So how hardcore are you going to get about this? You're going to watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and maybe dabble in the Inhumans? Yeah. Or
the movies are a job in and of themselves.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. And I stopped at Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or I bogged down, I think, in the third season. And I've always wanted to go back, but at this point I'll probably have to back up a couple of seasons and, you know, get a running start to the present. Mm-hmm. And that's daunting to me. So
just maybe go back a few issues.
few
we are
issues?
On a comic book podcast.
Yeah. Yeah.
A few episodes or something like that. And it'll probably come back to you.
And I also, when we had Brian Cronin, when we interviewed him about his X-Men book, I was like, you know, because there was enough about his book, I got to tell you, that was inspiring to me to want to go back and revisit the X-Men.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've been burnt out on X-Men for a long time now. I don't even read a monthly title anymore. I got so frustrated with it. But, you know, I was like, you know, I love that Logan movie. Mm. I was really surprised how much I liked that Logan movie.
You could just watch it on its own.
Yeah,
that's true. It's true.
And I was like, maybe I should go back and rewatch them X-Men movies.
You skipped the third one.
But, you know, and then I remembered, I didn't even make it to Age of Apocalypse.
Yeah, neither have I.
You don't need to.
And so I'm like, but you know, gosh darn it, I really did like that Logan movie.
Yeah.
That was really well done. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of wondering if I will have this greater appreciation for what they did with the Logan movie, because they pulled out a lot of great stops in that, and kind of like in a lot of ways made up for some silly choices that they made in the earlier films.
Sure.
But maybe that was just me.
I just view it as a standalone thing that you don't need to watch anything else for, almost. Yeah. So,
well, you know me, I'm hardcore about the history of things.
Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to go back and watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or Legion or any of these comic book...
you got to try out that Inhumans. I've been hearing all kinds of wild things about that Inhumans
show. Didn't they cancel that?
Yeah.
Finally.
From what I heard, it was unwatchable.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, just do the core. Just work your way through the core.
All right.
Yeah.
So anyway, speaking of TV shows based on comics, just heard... just moments ago, The Deadly Class is coming out on the Sci-Fi Channel. Tell me about Deadly Class. I'd never heard of it before.
Yeah, it's a good Rick Remender title with art by Wes Craig. Mm-hmm. I always have to catch myself because I want to say Wes Craven every time. And it follows a homeless boy in the 80s who basically starts going to a secret school where they teach young kids how to become killers and assassins.
Yep.
So it's like the evil Harry Potter. And
some people would say Harry Potter was evil.
Well,
or maybe not evil, but a jerk.
Sure.
I think there's a bunch of jerks in Deadly Class, so you know.
All right.
Yeah.
Rick Remender loves jerk characters.
Yes.
So, yeah.
So the show is being run by the Russo brothers of Infinity War, and I forget who the director was though, or anybody else attached to it.
I can't remember. I did just see the trailer, and it does look very good. And
yeah.
They do splicing of the comic book with the TV show, so you can kind of see what it's based off of if you're not familiar with the comic. It looks really good.
Yeah.
So,
cool. All right, on the Sci-Fi Channel or streaming near you. Moon Knight is going to be part of the, or might be part, it's considered, might be part of the MCU. Do we want to see Moon Knight in one of the MCU movies?
Meh.
Yeah,
Moon Knight's a problematic character.
Is he?
Yeah, because he's interesting depending on who's writing him, which is, you know, but also they've just never really nailed down how to tell stories with him. Sometimes, you know, because when he first arrived on the scene way back when, he was, kind of a really not particularly original Batman knockoff.
Yeah,
because he's a wealthy millionaire, and you know, with did he have the French sidekick?
I thought he did back
yeah.
then.
Yeah, who flew his helicopter?
And his name was Frenchie.
Frenchie, yeah. Wow, there's, yeah, that's just so on the nose. It's not even funny.
Yeah.
But then they added another wrinkle. Was it in the late 70s or the 80s where he was schizophrenic?
Yeah.
Or at least he had split personality disorder.
And they've been milking that hard the past 5 years.
And so every time, and frequently when someone takes charge of him, like in the Bendis stories or whatnot, yeah. they will fixate on one of those personalities and make that one paramount and the others tertiary. So that's why I see him as being a problematic character to sort of introduce yeah. because there's I've enjoyed treatments of him in the past mm-hmm. but it's always a temporary phase of storytelling that I enjoy, and I can never commit to him for the long haul because there's nothing for me as a reader to hold on to.
Yeah, he's a good supporting character, just don't give him a TV series.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of fans though were hoping that Moon Knight would get his own Netflix series because it's a darker tone of comics like Daredevil and Jessica Jones. But Kevin Feige. Kevin from Marvel says that on a press junket for Infinity War, he said that Moon Knight's in the stack of character cards they have over at Marvel, and they may pull him out. So.
Mm. And for those people who read Squirrel Girl, my immediate thought is it's the Deadpool cards of all the characters that they're just like pulling out and reading.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good element. All right. For those
people. Wasn't Miss Marvel part of that
announcement?
Short stack deck. Yeah.
Well, there's a more detailed announcement, I thought, of them basically saying like, we got eyes on her for sure.
Yeah. They're going to do something.
Yeah. She's a bit more confirmed. It sounds like. Yeah.
Which makes total sense. Cause she's a much more popular character.
Right. Yeah. I can see Marvel looking at her with dollar signs in their eyes.
Exactly.
Hey friends, who wants to pay for another subscription service?
I don't pay for nothing.
DC Universe is going to be a streaming service, and it's going to have original TV shows based on DC titles like Titans, only on DCU, Doom Patrol, and the one that caught my eye was Swamp Thing, because when this announcement was made, your friend of mine, Johnny Boylan, who I follow on Twitter, just kept reposting articles. I'm like, what is going on?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah,
Swamp Thing title card is banking heavy on Walking Dead.
It is.
Yeah, yeah. It's the middle, big old hand and the A.
Yeah, there's a middle of the hand and the A reaching up as if out of the ground.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, so like, we were talking about that earlier today with some customers, and it's just like, okay, so that's like five shows is at it. Because if you have a streaming service, don't you need like a lot more?
And I just think of all of their like kind of direct to DVD like animated stuff that they've been doing, and just having the full catalog of that, I guess.
Yeah,
I mean,
because
I
don't know what else they would really be.
Yeah, that's
adding besides their movies.
This whole splintering of platforms that keep permutating, because Disney's going to have one. It's going to have an exclusive Star Wars show, all new characters, all new ensemble of events set. I think it's after Return of the Jedi, but none of our familiar faces, which I think is a tremendously good idea, because you know, even though a lot of that stuff is not canon anymore, Dark Horse did some great stories back in the day, but the Old Republic and whatnot. But you know, CBS has their platform with Star Trek Discovery, and it's like, God, it's a lot of different platforms to be paying for and try and keep up with.
I have not read any further details about DC Universe. Perhaps this has been explained, but I would assume, since DC is owned by Time Warner, that Time Warner also owns a bunch of cable cable company. They are a cable company, essentially. And so I would expect that the DC Universe wouldn't be like, you paid $10 a month to stream just these five shows on your Apple TV or your Roku. Mm-hmm. If you are a Time Warner cable customer, you get this content from your cable company. And I may be completely wrong.
No, but I like that idea a lot.
Yeah.
I mean,
you should be running this show. Yeah, you should be making all those big bucks. Jeez. You should be taking us to dinner, Ben Lawrence.
All right, let's go. I'm hungry.
Yeah.
There's a lot of a la carte like options that way. Like, I know Hulu streams in a lot of stuff, and you can add stuff in every week. Not every week. I don't know what I'm talking about. Every week I add a new service. It's hundreds of dollars every month.
Yeah.
So something like that, you know, could be an option. I just don't know how they would do that exactly.
Yeah, I think they're just, this sounds to me like a reactionary move because of the whole Disney Marvel thing that's happening.
Yeah, so if they don't announce exactly what you just described, then it feels totally like we can do it too, kind of thing. Yeah. And it's like, oh, no, you can't.
All right. Other shows, Young Justice, Outsiders, and Harley Quinn for some reason.
Because.
Is this the Young Justice animated series that we've been waiting for? Is that what that is?
I got the impression this was live action, but I don't know. Okay.
But is there not a new season of Young Justice animated season coming that they announced like 2 years ago?
Yeah.
All right.
I cut the cable cord many, many years ago, but I probably pay more per month in streaming services than I did for cable, and I still can't watch baseball legally. Anyway, and they're raising the price of Amazon. Never mind. One of the things that I always get from my friends here who work in the retail side is that you cannot return comics. Mm-hmm. Well, DC is making Brian Michael Bendis's Man of Steel returnable, with some caveats, I might add.
Yes.
Yeah, but so anyway, you have to order like. To return Man of Steel 1, 2, and 3, you have to order the same amount as Batman Lost.
Yeah.
And they don't say the actual numbers, but I believe it's a large number.
It's a percentage depending on your personal orders. Okay. So it's a set percentage rate. And Marvel does this a lot. So it's nothing new for us, but it's a little obnoxious. I did it because I want to return the hell out of this stuff. But yeah, side note, because it just automatically distracted me because I'm looking over Ben's shoulder and I'm seeing the article and they mispunctuated the entire article from the top. And that just bugs me about Bleeding Cool. That's not how you do Bendis.
Was the apostrophe?
There's two S's.
You know, but actually that's for some people, like who went to college like after 1992, that's acceptable grammar.
Blah.
So Strunk and White knows. The AP style guide or the Oxford style guide?
Yeah.
New podcast.
Definitely.
But sorry.
We can't compete with the grammar police podcast out there.
But yeah, we definitely ordered enough to do returnability because we have no idea how this Bendis Superman is going to land. Mm-hmm. We're all still a bit nervous.
Is there no confidence in his Superman?
Not here at this store.
Not at this table.
Yes, to be very specific.
I'm sure there's a lot of people who are just Bendis fans are like, yay. And I'm sure there's maybe some people are like, something different, you know. But from the two bits of Bendis Superman that have been released so far, nothing impressive has happened.
Okay.
Nothing terrible has happened. But
very generic events.
Yeah. In this market right now where there's too many things splitting people, spending dollars, I just don't have the confidence that this is going to be any kind of groundbreaking sales for us.
Right.
So I am definitely aiming for returnability right now.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. A couple of weeks ago, our friend Cole Hornaday here reviewed Vampironica, and we got a detail wrong that I want to correct.
Right.
So we assumed
it's a
Greg
good detail
and
Meg, too.
We assumed Greg and Meg Smallwood were married.
Yeah.
They are in fact siblings. Brother, sister, working on that comic.
You know, and if I'd done my research and vetted my Archie, I would have been better prepared for that. And Meg and Greg, I do apologize. Please keep listening. We love you. We love you so much. We love the work you're doing. We love the way you walk through the world, Greg and Meg.
And your Vampironica book report is the first one that I put on YouTube in a blatant attempt to get more viewers.
I love it.
I screwed it up.
Oh, dude! Let's just make a short list of all the things Cole screwed up on media-wise over the last 5 years. I love those short reviews; those are great, and I know it takes extra time and energy for you to do them, but
I think
they're terrific.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's not as much time and energy as it did to edit an entire podcast. When I did that, you know, when I videotaped the podcast,
and I go through and edit it.
One camera two.
You know, I hope all you folks out there in podcast land appreciate how Ben's willingness to take risks and experimentation and whatnot, because bless his little heart, you know, he's not getting any younger, and we do have a Patreon, so you know, please consider.
Oh yeah. All right. Yeah, so...
Patreon just has a subtitle saying, like, we're all dying.
We're all dying. Please consider
this.
Yes.
So, if you were listening to this and you didn't know that we occasionally put some of these book reports on YouTube, go to our YouTube page at youtube.com/thepaneljumper, and it's in the current uploads. And finally today, friends, we must say goodbye to Margot Kidder, who passed away earlier this week at age 69. And she was my first Lois Lane.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So she'll always be my Lois Lane whenever I think of Lois Lane.
Mm-hmm. Well, and there were very few people who played Lois Lane before her. There's I can't remember the lady's name who was Lois Lane in the...
TV show
in the George Reeves TV show. She was quite great, but in the, you know, the mid 1970s, to have this lady be so brassy and so ballsy, mm-hmm. And actually the chemistry that those two had on camera was really, really marvelous. Mm-hmm. And it captured the tone of the comics. And if you have an opportunity, go get yourself a copy of Superman the Donner Cut, which was how Superman 1 and 2 were actually one movie. And the producers made him they fired Richard Donner as the director. You know, Donner gets fired a lot.
Yeah,
there's got to be a reason for that.
Yeah, but he makes good stuff though. Anyway, it's just really interesting to watch them work. There are scenes that were thrown out. There are scenes that they reproduce just from the screen test between the two of them, and the chemistry is there. It's just so marvelous.
The last thing I remember seeing her in was in Smallville, but I'm going to assume she made plenty of appearances after that. But I always liked when she popped up, and Christopher Reeve popped up in Smallville too, briefly. And so always a nice throwback there.
Yeah. Well, life was not kind to her. She had a lot of mental health and drug issues. And I remember seeing her at Emerald City, sitting at the table signing things. And I am not one to spend that kind of money on getting autographs from celebrities, but I would walk by and listen to them as they talked to fans when they were signing autographs. And I stood there, and she didn't have a particularly long line, but she was so genuine and so engaged in talking to the fans. And there was a little girl there that she was talking to very animatedly. And I'm like, wow, this lady's kind of pulled her life back together. And because I'd seen her on things, and I just thought she looked terrible. So I saw her like on like it was either Babylon 5 or something like that back in the day. And I just felt she looked terrible. But I was watching this lady going, yeah, you know what? She's got a lot of heart. And I think that's what kept her going.
For my entire childhood, I always confused her with Karen Allen, who played the female lead in Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Marion!
Anyway, so rest in peace, Margot Kidder. Let's move on to book report, everybody.
Yay.
And Nicole, let's start with you.
Okay. The latest obsession that I have had is in the realm of romance comics. And I waited a long time for My Boyfriend is a Bear to come out. It's by Pamela Ribbon and Kat Ferris, or Ribbon. Rebon. Anyway.
Rebon.
I know. I'm always going to be great at this. Okay. Anyway, it focuses on this young woman who has like a string of just like really terrible boyfriends, and they break it all down, and it's really hilarious. And one night she's out with her friends. She gets a little extra tipsy and comes home to find that there's a bear who followed her from a camping trip. And she's like, I'm drunk, just come on in. And he plops down in front of the fridge and starts eating. And she's like, man, that sounds like a good idea. And so she starts eating, and then the bear just sort of hangs around and becomes her boyfriend. And he is best bear. Mm-hmm. And there's even like a period where it shows you like his different communications. And like, it's just a bunch of his head being like, grar. Frar, rar, garararar.
Click, clack, clack, clack.
Yeah, it's like I get a better understanding of the way of his communication. It's like grar is hungry, frar is nervous, frar is warning somebody's grumpy. Yeah, it's just like all that kind of stuff.
Coming in for a hug.
Coming, yeah, yeah, or something like that was coming in for a hug. And you know, he's like destroying furniture and stuff like that, but he's good in so many other ways. Like, he's handy. He puts up shelves for the kitty cat, and the kitty cat and him have this like interesting relationship. There's like even a cat versus bear problems with claws. Like, this one is bear, this one is cat, this one is bear, and like going back and forth to all the different destroyed things in her house. But he's very considerate and very sweet, and like, some of her friends don't really like understand the relationship and stuff like that. I mean, it's understandable. He's a literal bear. But maybe best boyfriend. So it was something that had me laughing and crying. I think it was beautifully done. It was totally worth the wait. And so if you're looking for something sweet and endearing, think back to maybe the great review that Chris did about My Love Story. It's kind of in like a sweet, endearing romance comic like that. Not quite where everyone is the best, because it's nothing can compare exactly to My Love Story. but I highly, highly recommend it. Hopefully we'll be able to get some more copies in the store. So if you want to snag one, it is recommended.
Cool. I can't help but think of a mashup between My Boyfriend is a Bear and Shirtless Bear Fighter.
Yeah. Understandable.
Whatever happened to Shirtless Bear Fighter? Did you read it?
I never read it.
Did any of us actually ever read it?
Yeah, it's a trade. Yeah.
Finished.
You know, we just talked on and on about it for days, and yet we never read it. So
I know.
We're terrible people.
Yes.
Yeah. We just, you know, drop and go.
Yes, I do drop and go.
Thank you, Nicole. I'm going to go next, and I'm going to get my...
What? Hold on!
Review.
Head exploding!
One of the first trades I ever bought here was Letter 44, about like 3 years ago, I guess. And I've been following them and reading them, and it finally finished, volume 6, The End, written by Charles Sewell with art by, is it Art Albuquerque? Al Albuquerque?
Al Albuquerque.
Alberto Albuquerque. Letters by Crank. And yeah. And it's, when it came out, I'm like, you know, it was 3 years when I read the first one. Mm-hmm. I have to go back and reread all of them again.
Oh, wow.
So before I read this, I read volumes 1 through 5. Even though I read volume 5 just like a couple months ago, I went back. And like I was saying, for watching these MCU movies, there's stuff that happened in these previous trades where I'm like, oh, really?
Right.
That happened? Oh, I'm glad I did this.
Yeah. Good.
So this is more like a review of the entire thing and not just like 6. So it's basically, I wouldn't call it historical fiction. It's like historical science fiction.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so it starts off with the George W. Bush analog who, in the early days of his presidency, they discover aliens in the asteroid belt who are building something. They don't know what, but the aliens are building something. So to prepare for that, they both send up an exploring crew in a ship that was hastily built towards the asteroid belt, and they start developing this new war tech.
Mm-hmm.
And they and so that's why the two wars in Iraq and Afghanistan were started, to basically get the military industrial complex moving and get this tech happening. So he serves his term. The next president comes in, Barack Obama analog, number 44, President 44. So the letter is the president. The number 3 writes to number 44. Mm-hmm. And in this letter is where he basically says, this is what's going on. Please keep it going.
Right.
And in the process of things happening, number 44, his name is Stephen Blades. He decides to let the world know about this tech, try to end the war. Number 43 goes into hiding. In the process of trying to end the war, he basically starts World War III. There's a new Axis versus Allies kind of contingency where the United States and China and another country, I can't remember which one it is, or it might be Italy, are together, and Britain, Germany, and Russia are a team. And then to try to end the war, President Blades tells everybody, oh, by the way, there's aliens, which just causes more and more panic. And then, meanwhile, up in space, the crew finally meet the aliens, interact with them, kind of piss them off, but then become friends with them again. One of the women on the crew has a baby, and the baby becomes able to talk to the aliens. And so that's how they're able to communicate. Anyway, we're all building up to the world is going to end. There's the aliens have accidentally created this energy beam that's just going through the solar system and knocking out planets like, you know, dominoes. And so the aliens are trying to slow this energy beam. They're not trying to destroy humans. They're not trying to save them either, but they're trying to correct their mix-up.
Mm-hmm.
And so Letter 44 is basically the conclusion of all of, or the chapter 6 is the conclusion of all of that. And I'm not going to give it away, but I gave a lot away, but, you know... Who lives? Who dies? Does the world end? Doesn't it? Who gets saved? It's basically all answered in this. And I gotta say, I do like the fact that they stuck to their guns. There were no cop-outs. There are a lot of Deus Ex Machina moments in this. There has to be when you're dealing with aliens and geopolitical forces.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess the cover kind of gives it away of what happens. But anyway.
A little bit. So would you say overall, full series, you're satisfied?
Well,
dissatisfied?
I'm not
permanently
dissatisfied.
Wedged on the fence?
I'm not dissatisfied. I did enjoy it. I would... it did teach me something, and that is... I don't want to start reading something that hasn't come to an end.
Mm. Oh, interesting.
Okay.
And I don't have enough time to read things twice all the time.
Right.
Yeah. You know, because I think when I got the second trade of Letter 44, it had been like almost a year since the first one came out. And so I'm like, well, I got to read the first one. So I've read the first trade like 3 times now. And so I may be becoming this kind of comics reader who only wants to read things that have come to a conclusion, which is why Preacher is great, because we're going to be having a Preacher book report in a couple weeks, because there's an end to that one.
It's definitely over.
We have a lot of people who do prefer to read that way.
Yeah.
You are not alone.
So I'm not. That's not uncommon. No. Okay. That's good to know.
Yeah.
There, I did enjoy some of the little details. They obviously wrote this after, you know, Obama's like first term, so the little bits of his supposed agenda. There's even a dig at Donald Trump in like volume 2 for whatever reason
early on.
Yeah, and I looked it up, and it was like in, I think, published in 2013, and so that was after the whole Seth Meyers roasted Trump at the White House Correspondents Association dinner, and so Trump was kind of like floating this idea of running for president, and so there's just a small dig at him in one of the trades. Anyway, Letter 44, Volume 6, The End. I'm done. We can move on to something else.
We'll get you something else now.
Get me something else.
We'll get you hooked on something soon, buddy. Don't you fret. Right.
So that's me. Cole Hornaday, what do you got?
Well, let's see. I guess I'll talk about the first issue of Kick-Ass 2018 by Mark Millar and John Romita Jr. It came out in conjunction with the new iteration of Hit Girl by Mark Millar and Ricardo Lopez Ortiz. I'm just going to talk about Kick-Ass. Now, I think this series, this miniseries has already reached its conclusion, or it's like on its 5th issue.
One just came out this week, and I think it's issue 4, maybe.
Yeah, okay, all right. I've had a stack of comics going back 6 or 7 months, and I'm finally working my way through them. And this is what happens when, you know, you ask so much of me. So anyway, just a little bit of an overview. The original Kick-Ass series, I actually enjoyed for different reasons. The original one was done by, if you recall, by Millar and Romita Jr. And an interesting thing happened is that Millar sold the property sold the rights to the comic to have it turned into a film before the comic book series is actually concluded. So the film came out before before the first arc of the original miniseries ended. So it was really interesting to watch the discrepancies take place. Also, this is a time when Ben and I were working on a series of shows at Annex Theater called the Team of Heroes Trilogy, which Chris was actually involved in it as well. And I was doing, and we were kind of caught up in the local mythology of the real life superheroes like Phoenix Jones and people like that. So I was really kind of caught up in the whole notion of what would it look like if someone was really crazy enough to put on a suit, a pair of long johns, teach themselves how to be to fight and go out and pit their well-being against adversity out on the streets. So in the original series, it was Dave Lazowski, was this nerdy guy that read comics, and I don't know if he ever really truly had justification for going out and being a vigilante superhero.
Don't look at me. I didn't read that crap. I hate that era of Mark Millar with the passion. So,
okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I have a fondness for it.
Yeah.
Yes, talk
okay.
to her.
So this is the second series, and it's kind of a little bit more interesting take. It's about an African-American woman named Patience Lee, and she is a soldier in Afghanistan, and she does her tour of duty. The comic book opens with a pretty bloodthirsty sequence where she's rescuing a couple of her teammates, what do I want to say, platoon mates, squad mates, who have been abducted by... ISIS troops or something like that. When she gets back home, she finds that her husband has been cheating on her and that he's not only taken all of their savings, but he's left her in a boatload of debt and run off with a pretty blonde. So she's stuck with her daughter and trying to figure out how to make it on her own. And so she becomes a vigilante, a Robin Hood kind of character, robbing from the gangsters and keeping some of it and giving some of it to the poor.
You got expenses.
Yeah, exactly.
overhead.
I remember enjoying the original series for what it was and kind of being intrigued on it about it. Where I kind of was, you know, where Chris was disliked it, I was tickled by it in weird ways, and I wanted to follow it. Well, Kick-Ass 2018. Just the first issue kind of falls short because here's an opportunity to tell this story about this African-American woman playing this Robin Hood role, and she just kind of rings kind of hollow. And I think one of the issues that Chris has and I support with Millar's storytelling is that sometimes it's just violence for violence's sake.
Gratuitous.
Yeah, and it is gratuitous. And this one gets gratuitous. And that's why I'm not even going to bother to review the Hit Girl first issue, and I'm not even going to continue reading it because that's all it was. Gore, gore, bullets, bullets. Psychopathology, done. I want my $4 back. Mm-hmm. But I'm gonna give Kick-Ass 2018. I'm probably gonna read the whole thing.
I love it. You just said I'm done with this. I'm never gonna read anymore. Except I'm gonna read the whole thing.
No, I'm not going to read Hit Girl.
Hit Girl. Yeah. Okay.
No,
I took it as everything.
I'm not gonna finish reading Hit Girl.
Gotcha.
I'm not gonna bother. But I will finish reading Kick-Ass. I know that these issues probably are not that I have with the storytelling are not gonna be resolved. But I also wanna figure out why I liked the earlier series and kinda liked the movies. And yet I have issues with how violence is being depicted elsewhere. And you guys know about how I feel about the Walking Dead TV series and Deadpool. And yet, so I wanted to use this as an opportunity to go, okay, Cole, why do you feel this way about these things? So I don't know if I can recommend the new Kick-Ass unless you liked Millar and are a devoted fan, then go for it. But beyond that, you're on your own.
All right, Kick-Ass number one. Thank you, Cole. And finally, Mr. Chris Casso, what do you got for us?
So I only read half of this so far because it came in yesterday, but I want to talk about it because it's really, really nice, and I've got more copies on the way, so if you hear this now, you can actually see them at the store. It's called The Artist Behind Superman, the Joe Shuster Story. It is written by Julian Volage with beautifully painted art by Thomas Campi, and it starts off with Schuster basically waking up in the 70s on a bench because he was poor and homeless at the time. And a cop takes him to a diner and gets him some soup. And he finds out that he draws Superman. And then it turns into the flashback about, you know, how when he was born and his parents and his origins. And slowly to where I'm at, where he meets up with Jerry Siegel and they start collaborating as young men. It's very, very enchanting. It is a little stiff just because it's essentially a history book, but it still drew me in, and the art is what really, really punches it for me. And it's just kind of fascinating to get these kind of details illustrated this way. It is by Super Genius Publishing, which hasn't done much, but what they have done is actually pretty great because they did Trish Trash, the Roller Girl of Mars.
And I had reviewed that at some point.
Yep, and they've been—they did the new printing of the Wendy project, so they, nice. They do some old ages stuff. They also did reprints of Neil Gaiman's Technophage, and we won't hold that against them. the first volume's good, but so yeah, I will finish this pretty soon. I just kind of want to get a head start on the recommendations. If you've ever kind of wanted to know more about the history of the creation of Superman, this is a very heartwarming way to look at it. It's also a very sad way to look at it mm-hmm. because it's going to get into the many, many times they were screwed over. Mm-hmm. But this artist is utterly fantastic. Thomas Campi is somebody definitely to keep an eye out for. This hardcover is $25. There is a soft cover for $20. Spend the extra $5. It's a nice hardcover.
I've already ordered a copy, and I just flipped through it and looked at a review online. So mm-hmm. I'm already sold, and I haven't even read the book.
All right.
So yeah.
Cool. The Joe Schuster story. Thank you, Chris. Mm-hmm. Well, that is Bookport, and that is our show. And coming up is quiz time. But before we go, I want to tell you that the Perfect Bound podcast is brought to you by the Panel Jumpers. See everything Cole Hornaday and I do at thepaneljumper.com, as well as Comic Extension here at 319 Northeast 45th Street in beautiful downtown Wallingford, or 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at comicstension.com. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or however you get your podcasts at perfectboundpodcast.com. Send us an email, perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com. Comment out, friends. Get your quiz hats on. It's quiz time. And this week, the questions come to us from me.
Yay.
What? Oh, I feel out of breath. Breathe. Breathe
deep. Did a lot of talking this podcast.
Breathe deep. The gathering gloom. Right.
We talked about a new Swamp Thing TV show coming soon to the DC Universe. Here are five questions about previous Swamp Thing adaptations. Mm. Number one. Adrian Barbeau starred as Alice Cable alongside Dick Durock's Swamp Thing in 1982's Swamp Thing, directed by Wes Craven. Barbeau went on to provide the voice of what character in Batman the Animated Series?
Everybody has a confused look on their face.
I know, that's terrible. It's because I actually know this. It wasn't Catwoman, was it?
It was Catwoman!
Yay!
That's what I was going to say, just the Adrian Barbeau bot.
Barbeau bot. All right, number two. Speaking of Dick Durock, after The Return of Swamp Thing premiered in 1989, he became the second actor to reprise a superhero role of a DC Comics protagonist. Who was the first to do such a thing?
Christopher Reeve
and yeah. Superman.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Number three, speaking of The Return of Swamp Thing, Dick Durock shares a curious distinction with another actor from another franchise, one Durock only found out about when he watched the movie after it premiered. Bonus points if you can guess the answers right now. There's more, but if you know what I'm talking about, bonus points to you.
No idea.
So he shared traits with another actor?
He shared... I don't want to explain it too much. One actor only found out about something about the movie he starred in after it premiered. Dick Durock had the same experience. All right. Mm. The franchise is Star Wars. The actor... Cole's got your hand up.
Dave Prowse.
The actor was David Prowse.
Right.
But what happened to David Prowse's performance?
He learned after the fact his voice got dubbed by James Earl Jones.
that exact same thing happened to Dick Durock.
Oh,
minus
wow.
the James Earl
that.
Jones
oh.
part.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize yeah. they dubbed Dick Dur- did they dubbed him?
Durock's dialogue was overdubbed oh. without his knowledge.
Oh, that's
all right.
frustrating.
Number four, Swamp Thing, the TV show, lasted for three seasons between 1990 to 1993. I don't remember it at all. But it starred Mark Lindsay Chapman as Dr. Anton Arcane, mm-hmm. and, you guessed it, Dick Durock as Swamp yep. Thing. This question was originally going to be a gimme where I was going to ask you who played Swamp Thing, but after doing a little digging, I found out that actor Mark Lindsay Chapman played John Lennon in a movie titled Chapter 27, a biopic about this man who murdered him.
Mark David Chapman?
Mark David Chapman is correct.
Of course I know the murderers.
Hey, good.
I just thought it was funny. Mark Lindsay Chapman,
yeah,
Mark David
Chapman.
Yeah, well,
that was what I was thinking the whole time you're saying that. Yeah. So I was just like, eh.
All right, number five, and finally, produced by DIC Entertainment, the short-lived Swamp Thing animated series lasted for five episodes between October 1990 and May 1991.
I had some of the toys.
Yeah, the title song, with lyrics like, Swamp Thing, you are amazing, you fight everything, nasty, was a parody of this 1966 song by the Troggs.
Wild Thing!
Exactly.
You make my heart sing!
So, if you haven't looked up, if you don't know the Swamp Thing theme song from the cartoon, go look it up on YouTube. It's pretty hilarious.
Sorry, there's just something. Cole was so happy that he looked like a mix between a T-Rex and Kermit the Frog.
No, I'm doing animal, dude.
It was like a baby chick to me trying to fly with its little wings.
Okay, you guys can just all take your vestigial arms and get the flock out of here.
Well, if you have an opinion on what Cole Hornaday looked like while he was singing, write to us at perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com. Otherwise, we will see you next week.
Send us your fan art.
Yes.
Fan art.